The Isaac York place lay north and a bit west of the cotton gin and general store that were the nucleus of the settlement. Rusty had hardly slept last night, trying to decide what his course should be. By rights, he should shoot York down like a dog, but he would not shoot him in the back. He would prefer that York be looking at him, knowing what was coming and why. As he rode, he kept turning over the options in his mind. Maybe he would not shoot York. Maybe he would not shoot York at all, but instead force him to confess, then stand back and let the law hang him. The longer Rusty pondered, the less sure he was about what he would do. But he felt that when he got there, he would know. Mike had always said that. When the time came to act, most men knew instinctively what to do.
Trust me. And if I ain't there, trust yourself. You'll know what's right.
Rusty rounded the winter-bared cotton field and saw the cabin ahead. He drew Mike's old pistol from its scabbard to recheck the load. He had never fired the pistol much and did not fully trust it. He liked the rifle, for he could hit anything he saw over his sights. A pistol extended at arm's length seemed unwieldy and felt heavier than a rifle, though it was not. He saw York seated on a wooden stool beside the door of a log shed, soaking up the meager winter sunshine. York had a jug resting in the crook of his arm. He had hoped to find York sober and able to understand fully what was happening. On the other hand, if he was drunk, he might not have his guard up. It might be easier to draw a confession out of him. York blinked, trying to clear his eyes.
Who are you?
You know me. I'm Rusty Shannon.
I can't quite make you out.
You were seeing all right when you shot Mike, Shannon. I'm here to make you pay for it.
The slave, Shanty, stepped out of the shed, staring at the pistol.
Please, boy, put that thing away.
York pushed to his feet, but swayed and braced one hand against the shed wall.
You saying I shot Mike? How could I? I've been drunk for 3-4 days.
Not too drunk to shoot him in the back. And you'll admit it or I'll shoot you where you stand.
No, you won't.
Rusty turned. Preacher Webb and Tom Blessing stood behind him. Webb reached out.
Give me the pistol. You're too young to get yourself in this kind of trouble.
Rusty was too surprised to move. Webb quickly gripped the pistol and pushed the muzzle down, and then gave it a twist that wrested the weapon from Rusty's hand.
I was afraid you'd take a notion to do this.
He's got it coming.
You have no proof. He says he's been too drunk to leave the place. Shanty over yonder backs him up.
Yeah, sir, that's true.
What else could Shanty say? Isaac owns him.
I'll admit that from the looks of things, you could be right. Isaac and Mike both left mad after their fight broke up. But these are bitter times, and there's other people who didn't like Mike's politics. You can't kill a man on suspicion.
That's more than he killed Mike for.
Settle down, son. I promise you we'll look into Mike's killing. If we find proof that Isaac did it, he'll pay. But that's not for you to do. It's for the law.
I talked to the law yesterday. The sheriff won't do a damn thing. He as much as told me so.
Have faith, lad. The Lord finds his own way to punish the evildoer. If it was Isaac, he'll settle accounts with the Almighty. If it wasn't, you wouldn't want an innocent man to burden your conscience as long as you live, now would you?
I've got no faith in the law, and not a hell of a lot in the Almighty. How come he wasn't watching over Daddy Mike?
It's not for us to understand his ways.
I sure don't. If he really punishes the evildoers, how do we know he didn't send me here to strike Isaac down?
He wouldn't have let us stop you.
I told you before, you need to get away for a while. Let things here take their course. That job I tried to give Mike, it's still waiting.
Job? What job?
South of the Red, in a Minuteman company scouting for Indian sign. Turning them back if they cross into Texas. The boys are short-handed up there.
What about him?
York won't be going anywhere. If it's proved that he killed Mike, he'll still be here when you come back. Or hung.
You're trying to protect him. That's why you want me gone.
We're trying to protect you from yourself. And maybe some others. There was hard feelings against Mike. Some of that feeling is bound to be laid over onto you. It's best for you and everybody else if you're not seen around here till this secession business quiets down.
All right, I'll go. Do I get my pistol back?
I'll ride along part of the way with you and give your pistol back when I feel like it's safe.
Isaac York won't be safe till he's dead.
Paper was scarce, so Tom Blessing had sketched a map on the back of an old order he had received from the governor's office in Austin during one of his limited terms and volunteer ranger ranks.
You'll remember the Fort Belknap country from when we went up north to attend the Indian removal. You ought not to have much trouble finding the company camp. When Texas secedes, there won't be anybody but our own volunteers watching the frontier. Just a buckskin line, and a thin one. That's why they need you up there.
There's several rivers to cross between here and there.
You'll cross a lot more if you stay with the Rangers. You just mind what goes on around you, and be careful. Some Indian will be tickled to hang your red hair on his lance.
Preacher Webb handed Rusty a book.
Put this in your saddlebag. It'll be good reading for you of a night.
I'll be carrying Dad's old pistol in there. You think it and the Bible fit together?
Samson prayed, then slew his enemies with the jawbone of an ass. Lord knows it sometimes takes violence to bring peace.
I've known many a man who carried a Bible in his pocket and a pistol on his belt. I'd rather ride with that kind of man than them who just carry the gun.
Thanks for the book, preacher. Don't you reckon it's time we got started?
I'm ready.
Rusty stepped past the sagging door of Blessing's cabin. Mike's favorite horse, Alamo, was outside. The mule Chapultepec stood patiently waiting, a pack on his back.
I'd appreciate it if you keep an eye on Fowler Gaskin. Soon as he knows I'm gone, he's liable to carry off everything that's not rooted down.
You're doing the right thing going away for a while.
I'm not forgetting Isaac York.
But forget about taking your own vengeance. Leave it to the law and to the Lord.
For now.
Rusty turned his eyes toward the Colorado River. Beyond it lay the Llano and San Saba, the Brazos, and many more. He then looked to the horse and mule.
I hope you all can swim.
Toward noon, the third day of traveling, Webb turned off the wagon road and bore northeastward. Rusty looked back to be sure the pack mule was following.
Aren't we going out of our way?
Some people I know have a farm off yonder. They'll make us welcome, and the women folks are fine cooks.
Though Rusty still had little appetite, he perceived that Webb was eager to make the stop. The minister enjoyed being among friends, and given any chance, he made friends of almost everyone he met.
I don't reckon there's any big hurry about me getting to Belknap. The main thing was to get me away from home.
These people's name is Monahan. Lon Monahan is a good farmer and a good man. You'll like him. You'll like the whole family. They've got a daughter about 16 or 17. Her name's Geneva. Pretty as a china doll.
Rusty found the Monahan farm larger and neater in appearance than the Shannon place. It bespoke prosperity, at least by the modest standards of a Texas still in its settling down stage. The main house was built of sawmill lumber rather than logs, though an older double log cabin still appeared to be in use. He suspected it had been the Monahans' first home and had been set aside for older family members or the boys of the family, a fairly common usage in such cases. Like the main house, the newest, largest barn was of lumber. The smaller barn and sheds, older, and of logs. A low rock fence surrounded a large garden. Out past the big barn, two men were building a new corral, stacking trimmed oak branches between double oak posts to form a fence. It was typical wintertime work for a farmer who had nothing to do in the fields.
There's Lon Monahan, out yonder with one of his sons. We'll stop and say howdy before we go up to the house.
Monahan's sun-bronzed features, droopy-brimmed felt hat, and brogan shoes would mark him anywhere as a farmer, no matter how far he might stray from the plow.
I swear to God, preacher, it's damn good to see you.
You remember Mike Shannon? This is his boy, Rusty.
Pleased to make your acquaintance, Mr. Monahan. Preacher's told me right smart about you.
I knew your daddy in the Mexican War. Hell of a good fella. Hope he's well.
No, sir. He's dead.
Oh, I'm sorry. We'll say a prayer for him tonight at meeting. And you are going to stay and conduct meeting for us, ain't you, preacher? I'll send the boys out with word to the neighbors.
Sure enough. I've always got time to share the word.
The other fence builder joined his father in greeting the visitors. He was a strapping youth near Rusty's own age.
This here's my oldest son, James. You all tie your horses and go on up to the house. Clemmy'll have dinner ready directly. Been a while since we've had a real soul cleansing around here, so she'll be damn tickled to see you, preacher.
You like to hunt?
When I've got time.
Well, maybe after supper we can go up the river a ways and see what we can find.
Well, not tonight. We're going to have a meeting. Maybe Rusty can stay around a few days.
Can't. I'm supposed to report to the ranger camp up north of here.
Rangers don't range all the time. Maybe when you get a little time off.
Well, thanks. I'd like that.
Webb and Rusty made their way to the Monahan house while Lon and James finished up their work. Their approach had been noticed, and a knock on the door was unnecessary.
Why, Preacher, what a lovely surprise.
Webb bowed to the woman in a courtly manner so ingrained that Rusty doubted he realized he was doing it.
It is sure nice to see you, Clemmy. Please meet a good friend, Rusty.
Pleased to meet you, Rusty. Come inside. I expect you two will want to wash off some of the road dust. There's a wash pan on the back gallery. Geneva, see that there's water in the bucket out there.
A girl appeared in the doorway. She was almost a duplicate of her mother, except for being a generation younger. To call her slender would have been charitable, Rusty thought. Skinny was more like it. But she had a pleasant face, eyes filling with curiosity as she looked at him. In the room's poor light, he could not tell what color those eyes were. He blushed as he realized he was staring, and that she was staring back.
I already did, Mom, as soon as I saw Preacher Webb coming. Brought in fresh drinking water from the cistern, too. Figured he'd be thirsty.
Such a fine welcome from such handsome young ladies reminds an old bachelor what he's missed in his life. And should be a lesson to a young one, Rusty.
The girl smiled. Rusty felt his cheeks warm. He wanted to say something to cover his discomfort, but he couldn't conjure up any words that seemed appropriate. The girl Geneva kept looking at him.
Does he ever talk?
I've seen him go for days without saying a word except please pass the cornbread.
Well, I don't talk just to hear myself. I'm not a preacher.
Leave the gentlemen be, Geneva, so they can wash for dinner. We've both got work enough to do in the kitchen.
The family was large and the table long, with benches on either side, chairs at each end for Lon Monahan and his wife. Clemmy was on her feet much of the time, bringing food to the table, pouring coffee. Geneva sat opposite Rusty, where he could steal glances at her. Two younger sisters and the youngest brother, Billy, sat beside her. On the bench with Rusty and Webb were the oldest brother, James, and Clemmy Monahan's father, a small, thin man named Vince Purdy.
Been much talk down you all's way about this secession foolishness?
There has. There are bitter feelings on both sides.
Same here, I'm sorry to say. Serious enough that I'm afraid it could lead to bloodletting.
Lon, don't be scaring the children.
Well, it's the truth. I ain't seen folks get so worked up since the war against Mexico.
It may be worse, because it has neighbors butting heads with neighbors.
Damnedest notion I ever heard of, wanting to pull out of the Union. Don't you agree, Preacher?
Every argument sounds good while you listen to it. Then you hear an answer from the other side, and it sounds good, too.
Which one sounds better to you, Preacher?
As a minister, I think I'd best stay out of it.
The way it looks, everybody's going to have to choose a side, like it or not.
I'm on God's side, and God wants us to live in peace.
There won't be peace if Texas pulls out. We'll find ourselves in the damnedest war this country ever saw.
This is no fit subject for the dinner table.
Rusty lifted his gaze to Geneva across the table. Somehow she didn't seem quite so skinny as he had first thought. The longer he looked at her, the more he wanted to look. He didn't have a lot to judge her by. Girls of her age were scarce down on his section of the Colorado River. He had gone to school with Fowler Gaskin's daughter, Florrie, but she looked too much like her brothers to arouse any interest. After dinner, Lon watched from the front doorway as James saddled a horse and set out eastward to notify neighbors that Preacher Webb would conduct services that evening at the Monahans. Billy Monahan rode north and west.
You tell them to be sure and come. Ain't a one of them but what can stand a damn good dose of salvation.
Lon, is it necessary to use that kind of language in front of the preacher?
Hell, he's heard it all before. A little honest swearing wipeth away anger and bringeth peace to the soul.
Rusty was reminded that Mike Shannon had looked at it that way, too, and the thought brought sadness. Mike had had much in common with Lon Monahan, besides their political leanings. Clemmy noticed Rusty's expression.
You're looking kind of down, son. Not feeling good?
I was just thinking over what Mr. Monahan said about war.
See what you done talking so free, Lon. Some things you ought to keep to yourself.
There ain't no dodging what's true. We just as well forget about fence building today. Preacher, I'd like to show you my horses. Traded for a nice little set of mares and a sorrel stud since you were here last.
As I recall, the Comanches cleaned you out last year.
I'm hoping the volunteers can keep them crafty devils from coming south.
I'll just be following orders, but I expect we'll do the best we can.
The country you've got to cover is big, and there won't be many of you. Seeing how poor Texas is now, I can't understand how anybody thinks it'd be better off by quitting the Union. Everything the Union's been doing for us, we'd have to do for ourselves.
A lot of folks don't think it has done much for us.
A lot of folks are wrong. I'm afraid they're fixing to find that out.
The first neighbors had arrived by horseback, wagons, and buggies. Most brought food and baskets or sacks to help the Monahans feed the expected crowd. Rusty had been introduced to so many that he had no chance of remembering their names. It had always been that way when he had accompanied Preacher Webb on his circuit. Prayer meeting was more than a religious event. It provided a rare excuse for a social gathering where the men could swap yarns, horses, and dogs. Women could exchange news about weddings and births and discuss whatever they'd been able to learn about fashion in faraway places like St. Louis or New Orleans. This gathering also provided a forum for extended discussions on secession. Rusty had noted that the preponderance of opinion favored pulling out. Monahan's was definitely a minority view. In another setting, the debate might have sparked violent quarreling, but here the visitors respected the host's views, even as most disagreed with them. Clemmy Monahan walked out onto the porch.
"Appears to me that just about everybody's here. I'm looking hungry."
Preacher Webb, you want to eat first or do it after the preaching?
"Minister first to the body, then the soul will be ready for the word."
"Amen."
A large man of commanding presence rode up on a big white horse, trailed by three riders whose subservient manner indicated they were in his pay or in his debt. The man wore a long black coat, open so that no one could miss seeing the pistol he carried in his broad waistband. Lon Monahan was obviously displeased about the late arriving guests, but he showed himself a good host by walking out to meet them.
"You're late, Colonel, but we're just fixing to eat supper. There's plenty for all of you. And Preacher Webb ain't delivered his sermon yet."
"We've not come to eat or listen to platitudes. We've come to see how many choose to align themselves with traitors."
"You'll find no traitors here, Colonel Dawkins. There's scarcely a man in this crowd who's not answered the call against Mexico or against the savage."
"We've a different enemy this time. You and your family have openly allied yourself with the Northern Union. I must assume that those who break bread with you support you in your sedition."
"Damn you, Colonel! You've just abused the hell out of my hospitality!"
He moved toward the man, but Preacher Webb stepped in front of him.
"You are wrong, Colonel Dawkins. A vote here tonight would probably be 90% for secession. These people have come for a prayer meeting, not a political fight. I would invite you to join us in fellowship and worship."
"You call yourself a man of God, yet you sup with one flagrantly disloyal to his state. The devil rules here tonight, not God. I warn all of you, judgment day is coming. When the vote is taken and Texas secedes, a swift and just punishment will be visited upon all who are not on God's side. Be warned, Lon Monahan. You will be the first."
James Monahan, trembling with anger, reached down to pick up a rock.
"Get off his place, Dawkins, before I tunk you off!"
"James, this is for your daddy to take care of. James said it as good as I could. Get, else I'll be forced to stomp hell out of you in front of the Lord and everybody.
And damned if me and James don't whip the other three." "We could have beaten him, Pa. Him and that hired trash with him.
He ain't worth skinning our knuckles over. He talks strong because it's the only way he can get anybody to listen to him."
"I listened to him, and he scared me."
"God save us from zealots. He'll keep. Right now, we've got company."
They did not have it for long. Caleb Dawkins's appearance had sapped all the pleasure from the gathering. Conversation had been subdued as the people ate. Guests had thanked the Monahans for their hospitality and Webb for his message, of which most had probably heard little. They had saddled horses and climbed into wagons and buggies, then headed off in several directions.
"Yeah, I'm sorry, Preacher. Everything kind of went to hell after the Colonel got here."
"It wasn't your fault."
"He's been itching for a killing ever since he came into this country. Everybody knows he's a little crazy."
"That makes him all the more dangerous."
"Who is he? And how come you all call him Colonel?"
"He was a Colonel, once, in the war against Mexico. Hung a couple men for cowardice because they retreated without orders when the Mexicans was fixing to overrun them. Got cashiered out of the army. He never could see where he'd done anything wrong. He's hated the federal government ever since.
Rusty saw worry in Geneva Monahan's eyes, and for the first time, he was certain of their color. Blue, like his own. He felt an urge to put a protective arm around her, but he did not know just what he could protect her from, or how he would do it. Clemmy jerked her head to beckon her daughters.
Come on, Geneva. Girls, we've got some cleaning up to do.
Yep. We'd best be getting the stock fed. The horses probably think we've forgotten them.
I still say we could have whipped them, Pa. I was cocked and primed to do it.
You're too eager to fight, James. By the time you've been in as many scraps as me and your granddaddy and the preacher, you won't be so anxious for another one.
The next morning, Rusty went out before breakfast to saddle Alamo and pack Chapultepec for an early start. Preacher Webb had walked with him, but remained outside the corral.
I thought we were leaving today.
You are, but I'm not going the rest of the way with you. Looks like I'm needed here.
If I was Lon Monahan, I'd never be more than a step away from a gun. Dawkins sounds a lot like Isaac York, and everybody knows what Isaac did to Daddy Mike.
We don't know that for sure.
I'm as certain as if I'd been there and seen it. And one of these days, he'll pay.
Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord.
Yeah, well, when the day comes, I'll give the Lord some help. Maybe I'd better stay with you.
You're obliged to obey orders and go on. I feel my obligation is to try to pour oil on troubled waters. The smell of blood is in the air.
You don't reckon Dawkins would do something to the family? To the women folk and all?
I doubt he's crazy enough to hurt the women. People around here would turn against him in a minute. You worried about the girl?
Her? And all of them. They're good folks.
Good people, caught up in bad times. I'm afraid that's been the way of the world since the first days. We won't see the end of it in our short span upon the earth.
Rusty sat at the end of a bench across from Geneva and the younger girls. Lon Monahan's eyes were tired, his shoulders sagging.
I didn't sleep none last night. Caleb Dawkins kept running through my mind. Ain't there something in the scriptures, preacher, about handwriting on the wall?
It foretells things to come.
Well, the handwriting's on the wall here. Texas is about to pull out of the Union. When it does, all hell is liable to bust loose. Fanatics like Dawkins will run wild and free. For a while, at least. They'll be coming after folks who've talked against Texas pulling out.
Everybody around here is your friend, Lon, even if they don't agree with you. They wouldn't let him do anything like that.
He won't ask them. He'll just go ahead and do it, or try to.
You've always been able to take care of yourself, Pa. And we'll be with you, all of us.
I couldn't ask for a better family. But anything that puts me in danger puts you all in danger, too. The way I see it, we've got two choices. We can stay and tough it out, or we can leave here before the trouble starts.
Leave? But where will we go?
I hear that a few folks have already gone south to Mexico. Or we could move west, out to Arizona or California. Maybe even to Oregon, where there ain't no north or south, where there won't be no war.
What about the farm? We've worked so long and so hard.
The Vanderfords have been after me a long time to let them buy it. We could be halfway to Arizona before Dawkins and his crowd even knows we're gone.
Turn tail and run? Well, that ain't like you, Pa. Well, that ain't like us.
You're way too young to remember the runaway scrape when Santa Anna marched across Texas bent on wiping us all out. A lot of brave folks packed up and ran because they didn't see any other way to survive. You know what I'm talking about, preacher.
I'm afraid I read the handwriting on the wall the same way you do.
Well, there ought to be somebody who could do something. The Rangers, maybe. There's more to the Rangers than fighting Indians. Aren't we supposed to keep the peace?
When Texas secedes, there won't be any peace to keep, Rusty. Not likely to be much of a government. Not for a while. Maybe not even any Rangers.
To hell with Caleb Dawkins. We'll fight him, and we'll kill him if we have to.
You shouldn't speak of killing, James. Don't even think of it.
This place is ours. We built it from nothing. We're not going to Mexico or Oregon or anywhere else. We're staying right here.
Y'all say the same? Even knowing the risk, you're bound to stay?
There'd be a risk on the trail, too, wouldn't there, Preacher Webb?
Indians, sickness, outlaws, no telling what all.
Then we'd just be trading one risk for another, maybe a bunch of them.
Here, at least, we know what the danger is. It's got a face, and that face looks like old Caleb Dawkins. There never was a time on the sickest day of your life that you couldn't beat the way out of that son of a bitch. Pardon me, preacher.
I just wanted everybody to know what we're up against and to let you people have your say. Preacher Webb, I've told you before and I'll say it again. I've got the best damned family of anybody I know.
I envy you your family, but I do not envy the position you're in.
Long as we stick together, ain't nothing can whip us.
After breakfast, Rusty stood outside with the Monahans and Preacher Webb.
I wish I could stay longer, but I've still got a ways to travel.
You'll be coming back this way sometime, won't you?
That is my intention, Geneva.
I'll walk out to the barn with you, Rusty.
They strode in silence to where the horse and the mule were tied.
You sure you can do anything here?
There's no certainty in this life. I'll do what I can to keep the peace. The rest is up to a greater power than ourselves. Be careful, Rusty. The Indians have been given a bad bargain, and they're mad. You had nothing to do with it, but you're white. That makes you fair game.
I'll watch out.
I'm proud of you. You're a good boy, and you've grown up to be a good man. Now go and be a good ranger.
It was not a lot farther to Fort Belknap, and Rusty did not push hard. He didn't want to wear down his animals. Tom Blessing had not indicated there was any particular hurry. His main concern had been to put distance between Rusty and Isaac York until feelings cooled down. Despite his edgy feeling of aloneness and vulnerability, he found pleasure in traversing the rolling plains after breaking out of the cross timbers and its scrub oak country. They were different in many ways, both in terrain and in vegetation, from the Colorado River region of his upbringing. It was not entirely new to him. He had seen the area before, going and coming back from following the Brazos Reserve Indians on their reluctant march to new and less desirable country north of the Red. Rusty soon came to a creek he thought too narrow to be the Clear Fork. He was sure it was not on Blessing's crude map. Nearby stood a new picket cabin, built of upright oak logs and covered by a sod roof that he doubted would keep all the rain out. The sod was thick enough and heavy enough to pose a hazard if it became saturated with water. Its weight could collapse the cabin into a heap of ruin and bury anyone unlucky enough to have sought shelter inside. But perhaps its owner was better at farming than at carpentry. A man was stacking stones, building a rock fence around a garden plot. He was so intent on his work, or whatever else was on his mind, that he remained unaware until Rusty was almost close enough to reach across the fence and touch him.
Howdy!
The man jumped backward, bringing a large rock up defensively as if to brain Rusty with it. A trickle of brown down his chin showed he'd been chewing tobacco.
My God, you could have been an Indian. Why don't you make a little noise before you slip up on a feller?
This old mule sloshes is like a water barrel on a wagon. You must have been studying hard not to hurt us.
Yeah, maybe I was. I need to pay more attention if I'm to keep living in this country. Just because they've moved the Indians out don't mean they might not come back.
Could you blame them? They were given this land, and then it was taken away from them.
It wasn't me that gave them the reservation, and it wasn't me that told them they had to leave. Damn government never did ask my opinion about anything. If I hadn't took up this place, somebody else would have. Can't blame me for that, can you?
Seems like it doesn't do much good to blame anybody. It's a mess, and we have to live with it the best we can. Mind if I water my stock at your creek?
Yeah, the creek ain't mine, just the land that runs up to it. If you and your animals drink it all up, them fellers downstream will just have to take care of themselves.
I'm on my way up to Fort Belknap. I've been through here before, but I'm a little hazy about the distance.
Well, you'll make it in another day easy enough, unless if you lope it up a little. What kind of business draws you to Belknap?
I'm reporting for duty there.
You look kind of young to be one of them Minutemen Rangers.
Captain Blessing thinks I'm old enough.
You're liable to age in a hurry. Some hard old boys hang around in the brush outside of Fort Belknap. They don't take kindly to the law messing with their business.
What kind of business?
Well, some peddle whiskey up north of the Red River on the Indian reservation. Others go up there and steal Indian horses. When the Indians get mad enough or drunk enough to start raising hell, it's always somebody innocent that gets hurt. They don't try to find the ones that's actually caused their trouble. Anybody white will do. I don't ordinarily give advice where it ain't been asked for, but you look like some mother's nice young son. If I was you, I wouldn't advertise too high about being a ranger. Some of them rough boys might decide to leave you laying out on the prairie and pretend like the Indians done it.
Once I join the company I'm assigned to, there won't be any secret about who I am.
Now, rangers up in this country generally travel in packs, or at least in pairs, so one can watch the front while the other watches the rear. Indians ain't the only danger around here, not by long ways. You heard about Agent Neighbors getting murdered in Belknap? Just because he tried to help the reserve Indians.
I suppose some of those rough boys pass this way from time to time.
Well, I try to see very little and tell even less. If I was to talk to a ranger, somebody might come by here some dark night and blow my light out.
If any of them was to ride up here now and see me talking to you, and they found out you're a ranger, they might get the same idea. So I'd take it kindly if you'd water your stock and move on.
I'm obliged to you for the water and the words of wisdom.
Well, they never cost me nothing. Hey, watch out for yourself. I'd hate for your mother to have to grieve for you.
Rusty tried to be watchful, for he knew this could be dangerous country. But he missed seeing the band of horses until they came boiling over a hill and swept down toward him. A rider galloped along in front, pointing the way. Several others rode alongside and behind, keeping the animals moving at a fast clip. Rusty felt a wild jolt of apprehension, thinking the horsemen were Comanches. His fear eased as he saw they were white. He realized that Comanches were in the habit of taking horses north, not south. He pulled to the left to be out of the way. The man who rode point reined around and came directly toward Rusty, followed by two of his companions. The point rider gave Rusty a close scrutiny without speaking. He was young enough that his several days' growth of whiskers looked soft and uneven, but his hard gaze brought back Rusty's uneasiness.
Howdy.
I don't know you. Who are you?
My name's Rusty Shannon. What's yours?
Where are you headed?
Up the country a ways.
What for?
Looking for kin.
You sure your kin ain't in the Federal Army? Or maybe the Ranger Spy Company up there?
I don't know anybody in the Army, or in any spy company either.
Rusty strongly suspected these were Indian horses, stolen off the reservation. The threat of war had raised the price of horses enough to tempt even an honest man, much less one already inclined to be a thief. Rusty's life might not be worth a brass peso if these men knew his true business. He made an effort to keep his hand still, not to let it move down toward the stock of his rifle. He doubted he would live to bring the weapon clear of leather.
I don't mean to hold you fellas up. You look like you're in a hurry.
Another rider spurred up, his face flushed with excitement.
What the hell have you stopped for? They're right behind us.
He pointed in the direction from which they had come.
Oh, well, look at that.
The point man aimed his pistol at Rusty, then changed his mind.
Shoot him, damn it, and let's get out of here.
The other drew his pistol to do the chore for him.
No! They might hang us for horse stealing, Pete. It sure as hell hang us for killing. Reckon you can forget what we look like, Rusty?
I've already forgotten.
We better let the horses go. We can't save them and our scalps, too.
All right. There'll be more horses another time. I wouldn't stay here if I was you, Rusty. You're fixing to meet up with a bunch of real mad Injuns.
Rusty's anxiety over the horsemen was replaced by anxiety over what was coming next. He saw a thicket a couple of hundred yards away.
Don't let me hold you back.
Rusty touched his heels to Alamo's sides. Chapultepec lagged so that Rusty had to turn loose of the lead rope to prevent being pulled from the saddle. He circled back to recover the animal.
Oh, damn mule! You're liable to get me killed!
The delay prevented him from reaching the thicket in time. More than a dozen riders appeared on the hill where he had first seen the stolen horses. As they galloped down the slope, several split off and came after Rusty. There was no doubt this time. These were Indians. Rusty saw that he had no chance to reach the thicket. He pulled hard on the reins and slipped the rifle from its scabbard. He knew he had no chance. He might shoot one, but the others would cut him down before he could reload. Daddy Mike had always said the worst thing a man could do was to give himself up to Indians. The only other option he saw was to go down fighting. It seemed futile to kill just one when he could see half a dozen coming at him. He waited, his heart pounding and his mouth dry as old leather. He wished Preacher Webb were with him. Preacher could charm his way into or out of almost any situation.
Lord, if you're really up there and paying any attention, you'd better do something quick. Yonder go the ones that stole your horses. It wasn't me.
He realized they probably did not understand what he was saying. He hoped they understood his gestures.
Yonder they go!
How come you didn't go with them, bub?
He had not noticed that one of the men was white.
Because I wasn't with them in the first place.
You're trying to make us believe you just happened into them?
Yes, sir. Or they just happened into me. I was headed the other direction, to Fort Belknap.
Several sets of dark and glittering eyes stared accusingly at him. He suspected some of the Indians understood enough English to get the gist of what he had said. One pointed to the mule. Rusty feared he was claiming the animal, which would mean they had made up their minds he was a thief.
There wasn't no mules among the bunch that was stolen.
Not this one, for sure. I brought Chapultepec with me all the way up from the Colorado River. Alamo, too. That's the Shannon brand. An S with a bar under it. I'm Rusty Shannon.
What's your business in Belknap?
I'm looking for some kin.
Who are they? Maybe I know them.
Our family's the Shannons.
I don't recall any Shannons up that way. You sure they're there?
I'm not sure of anything, but I thought I'd look.
Rusty could see that several Indians who had followed the thieves had abandoned that chase and were helping run down the loose horses. He saw a couple of army uniforms as well.
I don't like to call anybody a liar till I know for sure, but let's just say I ain't done wondering. Soon the Tonkawas finish rounding up their horses, we'll all head back towards Fort Belknap together. We'll see if we can find any Shannons.
Tonkawas? I figured these were Comanches.
That's one big trouble with you people in Texas. You never could tell one Indian from another. It's caused you no end of grief, and them too. The Comanches are as wild as deer.
These look pretty wild too, coming at me like they did.
Well, if they was the killing kind of Indian, you'd already be halfway to hell and smelling the smoke. The Tonkawas don't mean any harm to anybody, except Comanches. They used to give you Texans a lot of help against the wild Indians. The reward you gave them was to kick them across a river.
Rusty remembered the sad exodus, but under present circumstances, he had no intention of letting them know he had been there. The Indians had turned back the leaders of the stolen horse herd and were pushing the bunch in Rusty's direction. The two army men rode ahead. One of the pair bore himself with exaggerated dignity, which led Rusty to assume he was an officer of some kind. Probably a lieutenant, he thought. Daddy Mike had always said lieutenants tended to have an inflated view of their importance. By the time they made captain, most had had their egos punctured often enough to let the excess air out of them. The officer gave Rusty a study of the most negative sort.
I see you captured one of them, Harrison.
We're inclined to believe he's not one of them. He says he was on his way north and just happened to run into the thieves. None of the Tonks claim his horse or mule.
Perhaps. They haven't all seen them yet. If you are what you claim to be, I must say that I find fault with your choice of company.
They weren't any company of mine. It looked for a minute like they were fixing to shoot me.
He considered showing the note Tom Blessing had written for the captain of Rangers, but decided it might be well to wait until they reached Belknap. He did not know the Army's opinion of the Rangers. If it was like the Rangers' opinion of the Army, he had better keep his mouth shut.
What matters most is that the Indians recover their horses. To be on the safe side, we'll turn you over to the authorities as we pass Belknap. If they find no fault with you, they'll free you quickly enough. They do not seem to find much fault with people who steal from the Indians. Should the occasion arise, do you think you could identify the thieves?
One or two, maybe. Most of them were too far away.
Though technically not a prisoner, Rusty felt like one. Should he try to escape his mixed escort, he suspected he would be run down or shot. He decided to make the best of the present situation, inasmuch as he was being taken where he had intended to go in the first place. The lieutenant rode on one side of him, Harrison on the other. The lieutenant had little to say. Rusty suspected he did not like talking to inferiors more than necessary, and it was clear enough that he saw Rusty as an inferior.
Where'd you learn how to talk to Indians?
Tonkawas, mainly. The only talking I ever done with the Comanches was with the business end of a gun. I ain't no Texan, but I lived there a while near the Tonks. They're good people if you overlook their eating habits.
Like what?
Ain't nothing pleases them more than a little barbecued Comanche. Eating their enemy gives them some of his strength, the way they figure it. Of course, that's what makes other Indians hate them. Now, you Texans have moved them up into the territory and put them smack dab in the middle of their enemies. It'll be a wonder if the other tribes don't kill them all.
They have the Army's protection.
Like the Army's always protected Texas?
I suppose you are one of those who plans to vote for secession?
I doubt I'll get a chance to vote one way or the other. If I did, I'm not sure which way I'd choose.
Perhaps you haven't heard. The vote is to be taken this coming Saturday. There are a few counties in the northern section still strongly pro-federal, and the German colonies near San Antonio. The rest of Texas seems bound and determined to charge up Fool's Hill.
What happens to the federal army if Texas pulls out?
The soldiers may find themselves fighting Texans instead of Comanches.
Nah. More than likely, the army will simply be ordered to withdraw all troops from the state.
Rusty knew many Texans would welcome that result, but he feared they had not thought the implications through. Despite the army's many shortcomings, it had provided the frontier at least a little protection. If it withdrew, Texas would have to fall back entirely upon its own resources, the local militia and rangers or minutemen. During the 10 years it had been a republic, Texas had never put together enough money to wad a shotgun. It had fared but little better as a state. He saw no reason to expect its position to improve once it was no longer part of the United States.
Looks like to me we're fixing to cook our own goose.
You could vote against secession.
That wouldn't change anything. I'd about as well try to dam up the Brazos River with a pitchfork.
Rusty kept watching in fascination the Indians who pushed the recovered horses along.
You'd best take a good look at them. The Tonkawas are dying out.
These look pretty strong to me.
As Indians go, there aren't many left. White man's diseases, hostile tribes. Pretty soon they'll all be gone.
I expect a lot of people will be glad to dance at the last one's funeral.
Just you Texans who can't tell Indians apart. If you ever got to know them, you'd see there's a world of difference between Tonkawas and Comanches.
The Comanches stole me once when I was little. I can't remember much except being scared.
Lucky your folks got you back.
They evidently killed my folks. Other people took and raised me.
You Texans think because some Indians are bad, they all are. I guess your experience made you hate all Indians.
I don't hate anybody. Except maybe one man. And he's white.
They were a few miles short of Fort Belknap when a dozen horsemen had suddenly appeared 300 yards in front of them, fanned out as if to offer battle. The soldier who had been riding point ahead of the Ramuda had his right arm raised so the riders could see that the Indians had a military escort. The lead horseman gave the Indians a critical study before proceeding to meet the lieutenant. He wore no uniform, but carried himself in a military manner. He brought his hand up in a sharp salute, touching the brim of a well-worn felt hat. His back was arrow straight, his black and gray mustache partly trimmed and turned up at the ends.
We were sent a report of Indians passing through the country. It was our fear that they were Comanche or Kiowa.
As even a Texan can see, they are Tonkawas.
Often I have ridden with the Tonkawas, but even they are forbidden now south of the Red River. Where have they obtained so many horses?
These horses belong to them. They were stolen off the reservation. And who are you to be asking questions of a military officer?
I am August Burmeister, a captain of the State Rangers.
If you Texans were as diligent in going after white thieves as red ones, these Indians might not have found it necessary to come south of the river. But as you can see, they are under federal military escort.
Ah, yes. The Federals. You are on your way to Belknap, I assume.
No. Do you think I would give the trigger-happy citizens of that ill-begotten community an excuse for killing more peaceful Indians? However, we have a man here to turn over to the proper persons.
Burmeister tugged at one end of his mustache while giving Rusty an intense scrutiny.
And what is it this man has done?
We found him with the horse thieves. He claims he was traveling north and encountered them by chance. We'll leave it to you to determine the truth of the matter. I trust that if he is guilty of stealing Indian horses, you will deal with him in an appropriate manner.
Rusty saw no harm in revealing his mission now. He took from his coat pocket the map and a note Tom Blessing had written.
I was on my way to Fort Belknap to report to you.
Tom Blessing, a good man he is. I was with him when we battled Comanches at Plum Creek.
I was there too.
How could that be? 20 years ago it was.
Do you remember a little boy there, rescued from the Indians?
I do. He was red-haired. It would seem he is still red-haired.
The name's Rusty Shannon. In the letter, Tom Blessing calls me David.
Shannon. That name seems familiar. Was there not someone called Shannon at Plum Creek?
Mike Shannon. My father. Foster father, anyway. They never found out who my real folks were, so he took me to raise him and Mother Dora.
A man of the cloth rode with him, I believe. His arm was broken in the fight.
That'd be Preacher Webb. Him and Daddy Mike were always close.
They are both well, I hope.
Preacher Webb still carries the word to the forks of the creek. And, Daddy Mike is dead.
That I regret. They fought a good fight. We all fought a good fight. This young man need concern you no longer, Captain.
Lieutenant.
Lieutenant. Yes, I should have known.
You should have told us you belonged to this company.
I was afraid you might have even less use for Texas Rangers than you do for Texas horse thieves.
I find them similar in many respects. Come along, Harrison. The Tonkawas are getting ahead of us.
The scout, Harrison, gave Rusty a wink and put his horse into a long trot to catch up with the departing officer.
I do not agree with this talk of breaking away from the Union, but such officers could do much to change my mind.
With a nod, he bade Rusty to follow him to where the rest of his ranger contingent waited. One of the rangers, rangy and hungry-looking, leaned forward, bracing his hands on the horn of his saddle. He wore a tattered buckskin jacket, crudely patched. His face was heavily freckled, and his eyes laughed.
Couldn't you talk us into a fight with them Yankee boys and their Indians, Dutch? We need to practice.
I have ridden with the Tonkawas as allies. You would not want them for enemies. Besides, Tanner, you are too skinny to interest them. Not good even for soup.
Looks like they rejected this one, too. He ain't got much more meat on him than I have.
Here is David Shannon. Tom Blessing has sent him to join our little company.
Well, welcome, David.
Call me Rusty.
Hope you brought money enough to run us a while, Rusty, because pay don't come often around here and don't amount to much when it does. Worst come to worst, we can always eat the mule.
Ain't that cannibalism, Tanner? Eating your own kind?
Rusty decided he was gonna like this bunch. The camp crowded against a clump of timber a short distance from Fort Belknap. The military post that had lent the small settlement its name had been vacated by the army a few years earlier. Rusty suspected the rangers had been placed away from the town so they would be less exposed to urban temptations. However, lack of spending money accomplished that purpose. The state required each man to furnish his own horse and firearms, and it was to supply the other necessities. The Spartan nature of the camp indicated to Rusty that the state's definition of necessities was poor and lean. Texas was rich only in ambition and spirit. Its leaders had nothing in their pockets except their hands, but they gave voice to extravagant dreams. Texas was a great someday land. Burmeister watched Rusty remove the pack from Chapultepec.
I wish I could say the state will pay you for the use of the mule. Promises I can give you, money I cannot.
Wasn't money that I came for.
Well, what did you come?
Duty. Daddy Mike always preached that we owe it to our neighbors to serve wherever we can.
A wise man, your father. I hope he taught you well in other things.
He taught me to plow straight furrow. He taught me to hit what I aim at.
Did he teach you to know what you should aim at and what you should not?
I'm not sure what you mean.
Never mind. When it is important, I think you will know. Did you get a good look at any of those horse thieves?
Most were pretty far from me.
If you see some of them again, it would not be a surprise. There are in this area those who have little regard for the property of others.
As the captain walked away, the lanky Tanner moved closer, observing Rusty's saddle and other accoutrements. Rusty thought about counting the freckles on the ranger's face, but decided that would take until dark, even if Tanner held still.
You ain't long off the farm.
How can you tell?
Your hands are set in the shape of a plow handle, and ain't nobody but a dry dirt farmer would be riding a saddle as old as that.
It keeps me on the horse.
What you want to do is catch you a lawbreaker that's got a good saddle. Shoot him and confiscate the saddle as contraband. If a man is a sure enough shot, he can put a good outfit together in almost no time at all. That's how I got my saddle. Only it turned out he was innocent. The joke was on me.
I'll bet you both got a laugh out of it.
You gotta kill a high class of criminal to get ahead. Poor folks never carry anything worth confiscating.
Tanner pointed to a nearby tent, the canvas old and badly stained. Rusty suspected it leaked like fishing net should rain ever chance to fall.
I'll help you carry your stuff.
What all does the company do?
Mainly just patrol. Watch for signs of Indians coming into the country. Most of the time it's dull and tiresome. Now and then we get a little excitement, like today when we thought we was about to do battle with a bunch of Comanche horse thieves. That one flickered out like a candle in the wind. Most of them do.
What about Captain Burmeister? You get along with him all right?
Dutch? Sure. Don't let his way of talking fool you. He can't help it if he don't talk good like me and you. He come from someplace over in Europe. Westphalia, he calls it. I don't know just where that is. I ain't been further than San Antonio myself. I just know that he was a soldier over there a long time ago, and he took French leave. Snuck off and left them.
I don't suppose he's ever snuck off and left this outfit.
Never. A man smart as he is could be set real pretty by now if he'd put his mind to it. He spent too much of his life volunteering and not enough taking care of his own interests. Acts and thinks a little too much like a Yankee for some people's tastes, but he'd charge hell with a bucket of water and most every man in this outfit would follow him into the fire.
Tanner had introduced him to Jim and Johnny Morris, brothers who had brought in a deer after their night patrol. They had the same ragged appearance as Tanner, though Jim wore a new buckskin shirt that seemed out of place with his frayed and patched woolen trousers.
I'm no more than a fair to middling shop, but I'm a pretty decent cook when I've got something to work with.
He fixes a pretty fair possum.
As they finished the fried venison, Captain Burmeister walked over from his tent. He carried a notebook and pencil.
Rusty, I must have information for Austin, so you will be paid. Perhaps. First, what's your true name?
I don't know that. I was too young when the Comanches took me.
It makes no difference. A few men in this company know their true name, but use another. I am at peace with it. Now, I must ask you
pardon,
this.
Pardon, Dutch, but look what's coming.
Rusty Quick counted 10 horsemen. He knew the man at the center and thought he recognized a couple of others.
Caleb Dawkins.
You know the colonel?
Met him. He spoiled a good supper a few nights ago.
For me, he has spoiled several. But he is a citizen. We must show respect.
Burmeister walked out to receive Dawkins.
To what, Colonel? Is this pleasure owed?
No pleasure for me, Burmeister. I have with me my son and several other men who just lost a large number of horses to raiding Indians. They barely escaped with their lives.
Rusty was certain now. At least one of the riders had been with Dawkins when he'd threatened Lon Monahan. He turned his attention to two more who moved up almost even with the colonel. They had been among the thieves who had stolen horses from the Tonkawas. One was the young man called Pete, who had urged the point rider to kill Rusty and move on. The other was the point rider himself, who could have shot Rusty but chose not to. The point rider's eyes met Rusty's and locked on them. Recognition was immediate, and so was sudden fear. The young thief surreptitiously shook his head, silently pleading that Rusty not give him away. Rusty studied Dawkins, wondering if the colonel knew the truth or if the thieves had duped him. Nothing in the man's expression gave a solid indication either way.
Oh, we saw but one band. They were Tonkawas with federal escort. They had just recovered horses stolen by white renegades.
Did you have anything more than their word that those horses they took had been stolen?
The word of a federal officer.
Federal officer? I had rather trust a gypsy horse trader. That wouldn't be the same Indian you told me about, would it, son?
No, sir, Papa. The ones that chased us was sure as hell Comanches, and the horses they took was mine, bought and paid for over east. We wouldn't lie to you.
I assume you intend to pursue the matter, Burmeister.
Patrols are out. If there is a trail, they will find it, and we will pursue. But whoever took the horses, they are by now across the river. There it is forbidden for my men to go. Your friends can go to the federal officers and make a complaint.
I told my son you would give him no satisfaction. You so-called lawmen helped the Federals protect Washington's pets while they were on the Brazos Reserve, and you have no stomach for facing them now.
Always the Rangers are in the middle. The settlers said it was the Indians we protected. The Federals said we were with the settlers against the Indians. You are free to complain to Austin or to the Federal authorities. I do not prevent you.
I will not talk to any Federals, and I can see I'm wasting my time talking to you. You're a foreigner, anyhow.
How long is it you have been in Texas, Colonel Dawkins?
12 years. I'm proud to say I come from Mississippi.
More than 20 years I have been here. So who is the foreigner?
At least I can speak proper English. There'll be changes after the election. When Texas is free of the Yankee yoke, you and your whole damned command will have questions to answer. I suspect it is infested with Unionists.
We have no more to say, Colonel. You are free to go.
Hell yes, I'm free. And I intend to stay that way. I don't have to ask your permission to come or to go. But you'll wish you'd never seen me.
That is my wish already.
Rusty wondered why he hadn't turned the Rangers loose on the thieves. It would have been easy to have pointed a finger. His hunch was that Dawkins did not know what his son had been up to. It would have shut him up in a hurry if Rusty had told. But Rusty had been dissuaded by the desperation in the young point rider's eyes. He remembered that the thief could easily have killed him, but had not. Tanner stood slouched and looking like a scarecrow with hands in his pockets, his ragged buckskin jacket open.
That Dawkins is a peculiar son of a bitch, ain't he?
Rusty, I believe among those men were the very thieves the Tonkawas chased. Did you not recognize them?
I never saw most of them very close. I didn't care to accuse somebody and turn out to be wrong.
Next time, accuse. If a man is innocent, we can turn him loose.
Burmeister's long-ago service as a soldier made him try to maintain some semblance of military order in the Ranger Company, though Rusty quickly saw that the men did not consider themselves soldiers. They submitted to morning formation and roll call, but their notion of standing at attention was decidedly informal. Some chewed tobacco. A couple smoked black and odorous cigars. Having finished the roll call, Company Sergeant Whitfield, chunkily built but muscular as a blacksmith, turned toward the captain.
All present and accounted for except one, Dutch. Private Haskins is absent without leave again, but I already told you that.
How long must it be before he learns he cannot dry up Fort Belknap? Always freight wagons bring fresh whiskey. And where does he get the money to buy?
There's people in town who buy it for him. I think they get him drunk so he'll tell them what we're doing out here and what we're fixing to do. There's many that don't want Rangers interfering in their business.
Detail someone to bring him. Handcuff him to a tree until the whiskey has gone from him.
Was it left to me, I'd give him a lick or two with a quirt and send him packing.
Sober, he is a good man.
Burmeister's gaze sought out Rusty.
Haskins was to be on patrol today. David Shannon, you will take his place.
Rusty was not certain of the proper response, so he made an effort at a salute.
You bet.
Burmeister winced.
Did I do something wrong?
I think you're supposed to say, you bet, sir.
The patrol moved northward toward the Red River. At first, Alamo looked back, wanting to travel southward toward home. But after a half mile or so, he reconciled with reality and plodded along, keeping good pace with the other horses. Rusty studied the riders around him. They had little of a military look about them. Their clothing was a rainbow of colors and a random mix of homespun cotton, wool, and buckskin, most of it showing the effects of rough use. He remembered what Tom Blessing had called the volunteer patrols along the frontier, the buckskin line.
Rusty, you any good at following tracks?
I've trailed deer, followed a wolf one time for 2 miles till I found its den.
This ought not to be too tough then. We'll be watching for horse tracks that don't belong.
How do you know which ones don't belong?
When the hair raises up on the back of your neck.
Sergeant Whitfield was in charge of the patrol. He seemed a man not given to smiling easily, for Rusty had seen no sign of levity about him. Nor did he have much to say beyond the orders necessary to get the patrol underway. Despite his considerable size, Whitfield seemed to sit easy in the saddle. He set the pace. Rusty soon saw that the sergeant had a way of watching the ground without missing anything that happened around him. Once, seeing distant dark objects that aroused his suspicion, he detailed Rusty and Tanner to ride out and investigate.
Don't get too close till you're sure it's not Indians. I don't want to explain to the captain why I let a couple of chuckle-headed boys get themselves killed.
I've already laid out my plans for the day, and getting killed ain't on the list.
Rusty noted that though Tanner seemed on the surface to shrug off the notion of danger, he was cautious in his approach to the dark specks Whitfield had seen in the tall grass. Tanner carried his rifle across the pommel of his saddle. 2 buffalo bulls jumped up and loped away.
At least it'll give the sergeant something to write in his report. Jumped 2 buffalo. Found no Indians.
The day's a long way from done. How do you know we won't find any Indians?
If there'd been any around, they'd have already killed them 2 bulls for meat.
Tanner's professed confidence did not lessen Rusty's watchfulness. He found himself looking to the horizon more than to the ground where any horse tracks might be. But he reasoned that Sergeant Whitfield was watchful enough for both of them. After their meager supper of bread and salt pork, Sergeant Whitfield beckoned Rusty a little distance away from the camp they had set up on the south bank of the Red River.
Ordinarily, I don't ask a man about his politics. Who he votes for is his own business. But you know the people of Texas are voting right now as to whether or not they want to stay in the Union.
So I've been told.
We won't get a chance to vote out here, but just the same, we'll be in the stew when the pot comes to a boil. You heard Colonel Dawkins. He's just one of a great many that's ready to breathe fire and brimstone after the vote is counted. It's going to be almighty important where every man stands.
My daddy was strong for staying in the Union. A lot of good friends are for pulling out. If I could vote, I don't know which way I'd swing.
I don't know if you'll be able to sit on the fence. They're apt to tear it down and you'll be forced to take a stand.
Then I'll stand with Texas. Not the Union, not the Confederacy. but Texas.
That suits me, but there's a lot of people that won't. You may be in for hell.
Rusty thought back to the pursuit of the Comanches, to the finding of the butchered woman. He thought back to the murder of Daddy Mike.
I've already had a taste of hell, sir.